Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest is PBS education correspondent John Merrow. You've seen him on the NewsHour. He has a new book called The Influence of Teachers. He says the so-called education wars grabbing headlines these days are irrelevant to the real needs of children, but he does tackle a central debate whether teaching needs to be a better job or if the job needs better teachers. By the way, he supports both sides. John Merrow, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
You know, I heard someone say the other day that you can almost divide the world into two kinds of grown-ups around the question, who was your favorite teacher? If someone has an answer to that question, any answer, if they can name a favorite teacher at all, that person is much more likely headed for success than people for whom school was a nameless, faceless experience. Does that ring true to you?
That does ring true, and I think, my bet is that most people had two or three teachers who influenced their lives dramatically and positively. If you're really unlucky, you don't have any. But
what? That's not enough?
Well, two or three is a pretty good number. It'd be nice to have more, and I think there's probably a recipe for seeing that we have more, but it's a little bit complicated.
The better job versus better teachers debate. We're hearing the job needs better teachers side of the debate a lot these days as school systems push for an end to tenure, to tie teacher pay to student performance and things like that. And you basically support those reforms, don't you?
Well, even Randy Weingarten says teachers don't need tenure. They need due process protection.
So, is that a distinction without a difference?
Well, not really. I think tenure has become such a loaded word. People say, well, that means lifetime job, and they think of people sitting back doing nothing. And so it's a poisonous word. Maybe it is a distinction with not much difference. But it seems to me as long as teachers can't be fired or capriciously or badly treated, assigned to teach something they know nothing about, then perhaps you don't need tenure. But the better job, the better people argument is winning the day. I mean, that's the sort of waiting for Superman, Teach for America, charter schools. If we just have more better people.
And what part of that do you think holds an essential truth?
Well, I that's a good question. I tend to come down on the side of make teaching a better job. We lose 40% of teachers in the first 5 years on the job. No other profession suffers that kind of loss. No other profession treats its new people so badly. I think if you could listen to what teachers ask for, they want a chance to collaborate. They want a chance to develop curriculum. They want their evaluations of students to count at least as much as score on a bubble test. They aren't necessarily saying we want more money. But if you could change those conditions, I think you'd find that an awful lot of the people who are now teaching are, in fact, better people.
But that's an important distinction because you're saying that we should define better job for teachers in different ways than we usually do. Rather than looking at pay and benefits and job security, we should look at quality of life from 9 to 3.
Absolutely right. And the dilemma is that the definition has been taken over by trade unions. So often better job is defined, well, how late can you get there in the morning, before the bell rings, and how soon can you leave? How many days in advance must the principal ask permission to come watch you teach? I mean, really narrow trade union terms. So somehow you have to wrest that better job definition away from that narrow trade union view and define it, as you said, quality of life.
So for any teachers listening right now or past teachers, how would you define making teaching a better job? You heard what John Merrow just said, PBS education correspondent, author now of The Influence of Teachers. Would you define it in terms of pay? Pay is still low in many places for teachers. Would you define it in terms of benefits? Would you define it in terms of keeping the principal off your back with only X number of unannounced classroom visits? Or would you define it in some of these other ways? Team teaching, innovation, freedom. 212-433-WNYC is our phone number, 212-433-9692. On the other side, on the better teacher side, you quote former D.C. Schools Chancellor Michelle Rhee, a leading better teachers reformer, as saying half the D.C. teachers have neither the skills nor the motivation to succeed. Do you think that's about right?
No, I don't. And I think actually that was her director of personnel. It was, I don't think it was Michelle Lee herself. But I suspect she felt the same way. Her director of personnel wouldn't be saying that. No, I think that's vastly overstated. There certainly are people who shouldn't be teaching, no question. And I would say give them a shot at getting better. If they don't get better, then get them out of there. You cannot. But the point you made at the beginning, Brian, is that this war is irrelevant to the needs of children.
Why, and actually you're coming down more on one side of it than I thought you would, you know, after reading a lot of the book. But if that one side of it is more true, then why is the war irrelevant?
Well, the war is irrelevant because the world has changed. I mean, the world has changed dramatically. For anybody, there are really three reasons we have schools. We went to school for three reasons. So one is custodial care. A second is socialization. A third is because that's where they keep the knowledge. Well, when you were a kid, that was true. The knowledge was there in the teacher's heads, in the textbook. That's no longer true. 24/7, we're all surrounded by this flood of information, which isn't necessarily knowledge. But schools remain these answer factories. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to regurgitate. Mm-hmm. But in fact, what we need are schools that help kids formulate questions, help kids turn this stream of information into knowledge and wisdom. Socialization. We went to school to learn to get along with other people. Well, today there's an app for that. There are hundreds of apps, and kids are socializing with people all over the world. It's like pen pals on steroids. But schools need to help kids understand that person they think is a 14-year-old they're texting with could be a 40-year-old congressman. I mean, it could be someone with ulterior, not very appropriate motives. Only the third one, custodial care, is relevant. But if schools are just custodial care, they're dangerous places.
That's why they have no snow days, custodial care. You write about schools of education, though, being cash cows for many universities, but without a real dedication to excellence. Are education schools the problem or a problem? Should people not be getting education degrees at all in the traditional sense to prepare for teaching?
Education schools are a problem. You could probably close down half of them and things would get better. The question is, which half would you close down? I mean, there's a handful of really good ones. And full disclosure, I happen to be a trustee at Teachers College Columbia. And I have, you know, friends at
But that's at a different level. That's a master's program, right, serious teachers who need – because teachers do need master's degrees.
But the cash cow part, you see, teachers are now paid based on how many years they've been on the job and how many extra courses they've taken. There's no evidence that those extra courses have a positive benefit on kids learning. So one of the things that Michelle Rhee accomplished is she really began the change the conversation about how teachers are paid. You can no longer say with a straight face, oh, I think you should be paid based on how many years you've been teaching and how many graduate credits. So that's going to change. And that means an end to the cash cow.
One alternative pathway is Teach for America and things like it. Other ways to get into teaching than going to education school. You gave Teach for America 2.5 stars. 2.5 out of what?
Out of 3.
Because?
Well, because it has flaws, and I don't like to see anything presented as if it's perfect. Teach for America has changed the conversation. You know, as I write in The Influence of Teachers, it's inconceivable that we could have something like Nurse for America, but we have Teach for America.
And that's, meaning you can be a kind of dilettante and come and do it, and that's okay?
Yeah, you're not a dilettante. I mean, you get some serious summer training, but that's really not sufficient. And you couldn't do that in nursing. You couldn't come in and take a couple of weeks of training and then go in and start administering medication and so on and so forth. And that says something about how we do not value teaching the way we should. I mean, it seems to me that schools of education, most of the training should be in real schools. Teach for America does a wonderful job of sort of walking back the cat to find out why some teachers were successful, some were not. And they are data-driven, and schools of education have learned a real lesson from them.
Is there an essential insight there? I mean, most of their teachers don't hang around for a profession, you know, for a career.
Yeah, and that's fine to me. It seems to me that although you know, I was a high school teacher, and I taught for 2 years, and I think after 2 years I was just beginning to get good. Jeff Canada, who's an icon here in the city, says he was not a very good teacher for the first 2 years. So most Teach for America people stay for 2 years and then go. Many stay connected to public education, though. Wendy Kopp is deservedly proud of that.
John Merrow, PBS education correspondent, author of a new book, The Influence of Teachers. We invited teachers to call in and say how you would reinvent your quality of life on the job if you could. And let's get a couple of those calls in anyway. Karen in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I went back to get my K-5 certification after already having my master's in education. And it just proved too difficult to stay in the schools because, you know, a lot of times they just throw you in and say, go ahead and teach. I was part of a program where I was teaching, like actually had my own classroom, but was getting my, finishing my certification requirement at the same time. And I was told I was supposed to have a mentor teacher, all this sort of thing, but in practice, I didn't. And so, and there was not enough structure within that school to make it where I could just say, okay, I'm just going to follow what the previous teacher did.
So you felt out there without a parachute and...
Absolutely.
Like there were hurdles you couldn't climb.
Yeah, and it was so difficult, and it was really frustrating because I still do feel like I'm very good with kids, but especially when it comes to, you know, kind of managing both the workflow and classroom management, if you don't have the support, unless you happen to be one of those rare individuals who's just gifted with this or got unusually good training, you're going to have a really hard time sticking it out. Either that or just your first 2 to 3 years are going to be really miserable.
Did you quit?
I had to. I also had some health considerations that made it to where I really had to. But it was, you know, but I repeatedly was asking for help, and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll talk to you next week. You know what I mean? It just...
Karen, thank you very, very much. And I know you want to talk to that, John. Let me get one other caller who I think is going to reinforce it. Ron in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. You taught for 17 years?
Yes, I taught elementary school for nearly 17 years, and then I actually left the classroom and continued to work for the New York City Board of Ed for another 13.
And
to say, just like your previous caller, that it's very, very challenging for new teachers. When I was in the school system, it used to be that there used to be a 60% turnover of teachers in the first 3 to 5 years. Now I understand it's down to 40%, but it's basically, it always was at that time, a sink or swim mentality, basically.
And there it is. And, Ron, I'm going to leave it there. Forgive me for time, but we got your message. Yeah. It's the same message as today's young teacher who called before.
Yes, exactly. And that's what really has to change. You have to make it a better job. One way you make it a better job, Brian, is you create conditions for success. When you hire somebody here at WNYC, you want them to be successful. The education, they just say, well, okay, come on in. You're on your own. Here's your classroom. And then, of course, now, increasingly, they'll just come in and put pressure on you. But they don't create the conditions for Karen to be a successful teacher. And therefore, we lose people. Can you imagine any profession losing 40% or more in the first 5 years?
And that's an improvement, he says, from a generation ago. You even suggest that for math and science teachers, where we think there's a chronic shortage because people are not going into the field, that the real issue is retention.
Yes, the real issue is retention all the way across the board. There's research come out of the University of Pennsylvania by Ingersoll suggesting that even in math and science, we have enough teachers. If we just treated them better, and in some cases that would mean paying them more, although my view on that is that we ought to figure out a way to pay people in the unit they're in, by the building. Because if we say we're going to pay you based on your test scores, we're just going to do even more testing. Right now it's just math and English and a little bit of science. But if we could say, okay, let's pay the whole school based on the kid's performance, then the phys ed teacher has a vested interest in the math. And so in the phys ed class, when they go out to throw the football around, there'll be some kids graphing, charting. How far did Brian throw it? How accurately?
So on, you know, the eternal issue of standardized testing, is it a paradox? Because on the one hand, you don't want to take away teachers' creativity. On the other hand, if there are so many teachers who are just so-so, then you want to standardize the measurements if you're going to really raise up the bottom, which is, I think, the main objective of all these No Child Left Behind policies.
Well, that's a whole other rat's nest, No Child Left Behind, which is now President Obama is talking about trying to redo that.
Just yesterday.
That's going to be No Child Left Behind is...
But is he on both sides of that? Because he talked yesterday about the need for more creative teaching, but he has supported the standardized test juggernaut.
Yes, I think he is on both sides, and that's unfortunate. I think we need to give fewer tests. Our kids are the most tested. But what we need are more teacher-made tests and are just sort of progress tests that you can give in the classroom and see how kids are doing. I mean, this technological revolution makes so much more possible. And if you can say, okay, let's focus on that. What do we want our kids to be able to do? There's no reason for a school to respect the walls given technology. So why not, for example, just simply in a city, let's organize the 7th grade, 8th grade social studies classes. Everybody with a smartphone, go map your neighborhood and just take photos of the trash cans. Which corners have, and then start sharing the data. You may find that in the Upper East Side in Manhattan, there's one on every corner, but out in Queens, you can start sharing that information. And you can act on that information. That's real. Then you'll want to go to school.
We're just about out of time. John Merrow, you know him from the NewsHour, PBS education correspondent. His new book is called The Influence of Teachers, and it's self-published, right?
Well, we formed a publishing company. We published on Amazon, and I'm donating the royalties to my nonprofit company, Learning Matters. So when people go on Amazon and buy it, they're supporting independent journalism.
That's the way to get it. Go on Amazon and search for The Influence of Teachers by John Merrow. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Merrow on WNYC.